Well, this afternoon, I want to ask you to ponder with me for a short while this challenging, troubling, and yet wonderful passage. First Book of Kings, chapter 19, and I draw to your attention the 4th and the 5th verse. But he, that is Elijah, so 1 Kings 19, verse 4, but he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a juniper tree, and he requested for himself that he might die, and said, "It is enough now, O Lord, take away my life, for I am not better than my fathers." And as he lay and slept under a juniper tree, behold, then an angel touched him and said unto him, "Arise and eat." I don't know whether we are to assume that Elijah meant quite literally in that sense what he was asking here. Or whether, as it were, it is just his emotions speaking. Whatever, we see Elijah in a dreadful state, praying to the Lord that even his life might be taken, considering himself, as he puts it here, to be no better than his fathers, presumably whom he felt hadn't done much, hadn't been used much, perhaps even had turned wrong and gone astray from the Lord. And here he is now praying indeed that his life might yet be taken. "It is enough," he says. "It's enough." Extraordinary. He's come, of course, to the king and the queen of the land. The king's name was Ahab at the time. The queen's name was Jezebel. He's heard and seen what they are saying. He's heard her threat, the queen's threat to him. And now he goes and he runs off by himself and says what he says and is in the state that he is in. It is, therefore, a passage that represents a remarkable contrast. A remarkable, astonishing contrast in at least a couple of ways. Firstly, it represents the most astonishing contrast in Elijah himself. The state of this man. The passage, of course, in a sense, the chapter belongs intrinsically, absolutely, to the passage that has immediately preceded it. That, of course, is the famous, well-known amongst many people, account of Elijah on top of the mountain, and all of the spectacular happenings that were occurring there. Remember how the Lord was speaking through Elijah and challenging the people with a challenge that we all need to hear down to this age, down to this day. Every generation always needs to hear it. Make up your mind, decide where you stand. Are you the Lord's or are you somebody else's? So on. And so forth. And Elijah had been there on the top in front of thousands and thousands of people. They were all gathered there. This is what we read about in the preceding chapter. As I say, it's a passage of contrasts. And not only was it the sheer numbers, it's the spectacle, the impressiveness, the drama that accompanied what Elijah was saying. The dramatic work of the Lord in proving and showing what Elijah was saying to be true and to be right, to back up, we might say, this great challenge. And yet here he is now. In chapter 19, he's all alone. He has even sent his servant off, who was going with him and accompanying him so far. He's been sent off, and Elijah now, all alone, sits down in isolation. No more the feel of excitement and the feel of the drama and the feel of the wonder. It all seems so different. He's all alone, and he sits down, and he's disquieted. And he prays to God, "Enough, enough. I am no better even than those who have come before me, who perhaps have turned their back on the Lord, and so on and so forth. Enough is enough. And we can feel for him, because sometimes we might not put it in just the way that he puts it. We might not feel it to just the extent that he feels it. But sometimes, you know, sometimes, Lord, why? It's a passage of contrasts because of the state of Elijah, and yet, it is also a passage of astonishing contrasts, just for this reason. As he lay and slept under a juniper tree, behold, then an angel touched him. Arise, eat. The God who one moment had been showing his power, his might, now was just one of his. Never mind the thousands. Just with the one of his in need. He touches. Arise. Eat. What's the matter, Elijah? What are you doing here? That's the Lord. That's the Lord. The kind heart of Jesus. I don't know. Elijah, the remarkable servant of God. The astonishingly courageous servant of God. The remarkable man of faith. That's what Elijah was. Of course, all the Lord's people are called to service. Part of faith is the call to follow the Lord, to serve him, to stand and live for his glory, to live for him. In our day, that is just as true today as it ever has been. Elijah had a special individual call, and there are people today whose call from God takes, as it were, every part of their being. Who are called to specific tasks, who are called to specific roles. Well, Elijah was like that. What a man he must have been. What courage and what faith he must have been given by the Lord. Called into that particular situation where the people of God, the people who were called by the Lord, the nation of Israel, those people who were called to be set aside to live and to represent the Lord in their day, were turning headlong away. And Elijah was called at times, apparently single-handedly, to stand and to speak on the Lord's behalf. Again, if today we are called still to serve the Lord, it is no less true that today we need people like this. Because today, perhaps not indifferently, not that different to what we see here, we are turning societies. The church, in many, by not speaking here in a judgmental sense, not in the slightest, I don't mean it in that way even remotely, but we live in a day where many people are turning away. It's like a knock-on effect, I suppose, in some senses. One bad example can affect another. Two bad examples can affect another two and more. It's like a pack of cards, you know, being knocked down one after the other after the other. Well, we need people today like Elijah, because sometimes it just takes one. If it takes one sometimes to set a bad example, sometimes it just takes one of courage to stand up and, as it were, to breathe guts, what we might say in Wales, hwyl, into others too. To stand for the truth in the Lord's name, and we need that. And we will need that in the generations to come. And pray God that in the younger generations today, that there will be those who will be given that ability by God and the courage to stand as Elijah did. But see, part of the reason I say all of that is this. We come to this 19th chapter, and people say the most astonishing things about this man Elijah. They say something like this, and I've read commentators who say this kind of thing, and I have heard people say this kind of thing. Oh, here we see the real man Elijah in all of what he really is about, you know? Here he is, as soon as there's a tough time, as soon as there's a moment when things get difficult and tough, off he goes by himself. He's a coward. Somebody needed to come and to grab hold of him and to give him a good shaking. That sort of stuff, you know. I don't deny that sometimes we need a jolly good talking to. If Helen, my wife, was here amongst us, I don't mind telling you that there are moments when she has given me a jolly good talking to, and I jolly well need it. In Psalm 42, the psalmist even talks to himself. In the name of the Lord, and in the name of the hope of God, he says to himself, Why, O my soul, art thou disquieted within me? He even talks to himself. Put thou my hope in God, he says. In other words, he stirs himself up again, and there is a place for that. And sometimes we need to do that. Perhaps that is what the Lord is helping Elijah to do here, but the point is, see, is just this. Elijah was a man of courage. Elijah was a man of faith. Elijah was a man who knew the place on which that faith rested. And yet here, just now, and I say that there is no contrast, I say there is no discrepancy here, just now for all of that faith, just now for all of the wonder of the Lord's call and the blessing that he had put upon Elijah, Elijah just now is disquieted, is discouraged, is wanting to cry out to the Lord in alarm. Just put yourself where he was. For all of the people who say that Elijah was just frightened here, for all of the people who say that Elijah here was just showing with real mettle and showing the coward that all along he was when the going got a bit tough, I say nonsense. Just imagine. Perhaps only a few hours before, on the top of that mountain, whose side are you on? He cries,
to the thousands before him.
And all of the drama of that call of God, because that is what it was, being backed up in all of the ways that the passage in chapter 18 tells us that it was backed up. Just imagine that. And then he comes down that mountain and comes to the king and the queen. And he hears the king, who had seen all that had happened firsthand, telling his wife what Elijah had done. Not what the Lord had done through Elijah, but what Elijah had done. How so often today we need to hear that it is the Lord who goes in front of us. It is the Lord who makes the way. We are but the servants. But to come and to hear the King of all people, the King of these people, the King who is supposed to lead these people before God, and now he hears him say that, and then he sees Jezebel and hears what she says. Just imagine that. Lord, what more does it take? Lord, I don't understand this. Lord, isn't anybody hearing your call? Isn't anybody hearing of the wonders of your grace? Even with all of this, isn't anybody turning to you? And so he turns and runs. He is confused. He is frightened, surely. But he is just perplexed, bewildered, perhaps exhausted. He feels utterly beyond himself. That's Elijah. You know, we stand as Elijah did on the glorious, unshakable certainty of our salvation. That is part of what I was trying to talk about this morning. The cross. Paul talks about the cross as Jesus being manifest before the whole world. Salvation worked out in God, through God, for this whole world. In a manner of speaking, the whole history of this world turns on that sure and certain foundation, with the cross there, unchangeable, unmoving. A glorious salvation worked out in God the Creator, Redeemer, in Jesus Christ and his life given for us, and that is unchangeable and unshakably secure, and nothing will move it. But still, you know, well, let me add to that. Partly for that reason, Paul exhorts, the Apostle Paul in the New Testament, in Philippians, exhorts the people of that small church in his day to rejoice, and to rejoice, and to rejoice again. Not because of themselves, because of the Lord. Paul at the time was in prison. The people at Philippi, that small church, were in great troubles. Rejoice! Again, I say, rejoice. And we should. We should be a people who know how to rejoice. But still, sometimes, you know, in our feelings, in the way we feel, in the way that we come to look at things sometimes, in the way that circumstances all around us, perhaps even in our own lives, perhaps situations that affect us, perhaps something that affects us that is deeply personal to us, let alone the wider situation of life, sometimes we can look and we can feel something so different. Well, listen. I don't want to stop there. In some senses, I've gone on too long already. Because that isn't the bulk of this passage. The bulk of this passage, if it is about Elijah and him downcast, it is about even more the Lord's unchanging faithfulness and kindness to just the one of his who just now is in a sorrowful state. That's what I wanted to say. See? Elijah sits and cries. He's exhausted and he weeps, in effect. And I'm sure he was, by what he was saying, weeping. And he sits down under the tree. But no sooner than he does, an angel comes, touches him, arise, eat. See, we might be exhausted. We might be bewildered and perplexed and confused beyond our wits. Don't let your feelings dictate to you so that you believe at that point that the Lord, who has given his life for you, who has purchased his salvation at the cost of his own blood, is not now all round about you and faithful, unchangeably sure just to you in your need just now. Will you? The Lord's faithfulness to his people, redemption worked out. He doesn't let go of his individuals. He doesn't let go of his people. They might at times almost be wanting. I don't mean it really deep down. I don't believe that any of his could really want it. But in their feelings, they might be wanting and wanting something different, but the Lord is all about them. Just drawing near to them, touching them, calling them to encourage them and to reinstate them on their way. That's what I wanted to say this afternoon, and I am sure that what applies to individuals applies to fellowships, to churches, so on and so forth. As I said, it is a remarkable passage of contrasts. The chapter before, we saw the God of power, and God is a God of power. And at times, God can work powerfully. And I believe we need the Lord to work powerfully in this day of ours. Some of us at lunchtime were just talking. I go to Mid Wales. And there, things seem to be in a decimated state. One word from God, if it is the right word at the right time with the people that he has prepared, would be enough with great power to turn things and change things all over again. the God of power and of might and of authority, the God of creation that we were talking about this morning, the God who has created and made all who is now the God who also has just those individuals, those ones, just there. What a God we worship, brothers and sisters. The God, if you want to take the contrast on, the God who is active, breaking down the hard hearts of people, that they might have a faith and a love for him. Jesus spoke in Luke chapter 15. He didn't say that it takes vast numbers for there to be rejoicing. He said, if there is one, you just imagine that, one out of all of the people who have lived on the face of this earth, if there is one who repents, who comes to faith in this God who is reaching out and searching and seeking to save, if there is one who repents and who comes, that is means there is rejoicing in heaven. Now what about that? Isn't that extraordinary? Well, the God who is seeking to break down the hard hearts of individuals that they might be won over for him and for his glorious eternal salvation is that same God who has those ones who might just now be downcast in mind, that he might lift them up, that he might exalt them. Jesus looked out to the people and he said, come unto me, all you. And he didn't mean here, if you are several in number, then alone have I interest in you. No. Come unto me, all you that are burdened, heavy laden, and I shall give you rest. And he calls us to do that. He calls us to be his representatives. He calls us to do the kinds of things that the Lord is doing here for Elijah. He calls us to do it, brothers and sisters alike. Love God with all your heart. Love your neighbor as yourself. The Good Samaritan was not somebody who just passed by, thinking and hoping to himself that this man down on the ground would possibly be all right. He was the one who actively put that love into practice. And that is because this is the way that God is. This is the way that the Lord is. This is the way that the Lord moves, if you put it that way, in his spirit. He has that concern for his people individually. And just when they are in need, he comes to them and he touches them. And he says, arise and eat. As he wants them as his. He wants them to be living for him again. He wants to reinstate them. And arise and eat. Do we recognize the blessing sometimes of just rest? The Lord gives Elijah rest. And sometimes that is just what we need. Rest. We are such a busy people. We live in a hectic day. I think sometimes people's busyness today is almost just deliberately engineered to keep us facing bigger, more important truths of life. But be that as it is, rest. God rested himself on the seventh day. He made the Sabbath day as a day of rest. rest matters to the Lord. I understand that scientists still, I might be wrong on this, but as I understand it, scientists still don't understand the benefit and blessing of sleep. Listen, the Lord does. He does. Rest, eat. Rest, eat some more. Do you need that just a day? Do I? Resting in the Lord's provision, just for a while perhaps, perhaps for a long, lengthy period. Just resting with Him all about us, whether we feel His presence or not. He is unchangeably faithful. And then the Lord leads Elijah all of the way to Mount Horeb, Mount Sinai, where God had spoken to Moses and to the people. And part of what is going on here is the remnant, you know? It's partly that, but let's stick with our broader theme. To encourage, to lift up Elijah. We need encouragement. There were those in the early church, we read of them, who were encouragers. We need encouragement. The Lord knows that. And sometimes it is good just to look back. Not to stay looking back, but to look back. The people in Israel were people who looked back to the great events of God's salvation. And we sometimes need to look back. The Lord, who was with us then, will finish His work. And so on and so forth. He says to Elijah that those concerns that he has will be met. There will be a new king. There will be a prophet to help him and to assist him. And in it all, the still, small, quiet voice. Not the impressiveness now. Not the drama now. Not a Lord coming and grabbing hold of Elijah, if I could so speak, and shaking him, like sometimes I tell people, sort yourself out. The Lord sometimes knows that we need something a lot more than that. The still, small, quiet voice. Elijah. Elijah. What's the matter? What are you doing here? And Elijah was also mistaken, because our feelings can lead us astray. He thought that his ministry was wasted, was no good, and he was wrong. Sometimes it is our job to just sow the seeds. We might not see the blessing. We might not see the effect. But the Lord does. The remnant, the 7,000? Elijah was used by God. He might not have seen it. See? As I said, these are the kinds of things that we are called in the name of God to do one for another, I believe. That is why I read Matthew chapter 25. Visiting those who are in need, those who are in sickness, encouraging. We're called to be those kinds of people because that is the way that the Lord Himself is. That's why, in kindness, the Lord of faithfulness, who has faithfully worked out His redemption. Bless His holy name. We would be lost eternally if it was not for that. That glorious good news that we need to hear and hear and hear again today. As the world always has. But that Lord too is not the God who just calls His people and says, right, get on with it. And even in their deepest need, even when just now, he calls on them. He's there. He's there. In the midst of it all. I suppose there are all sorts of reasons why we ourselves might sometimes feel rather like Elijah. Perhaps even there is somebody here this afternoon feeling not dissimilar themselves. He was a prophet. I believe that preachers today in some cases are called to stand in front of many people who don't want to know anything about the Lord. They can become disquieted, disheartened, discouraged. But so can we all. We can become just exhausted and tired. We can be concerned about the future. We can be concerned about our own lives, the lives of another, the life of a fellowship, the life of the church in an area. We might think that it is all hopeless. We might think that it is just ridiculous where we have got to, and we might want to cry out to the Lord. Why? Lord, where are you leading us? What does this mean? Misunderstandings don't help. Sometimes we can get caught up with the impressiveness. But very often it's just in the still, small, quiet voice. Sometimes we can think that we can just compel others into faith. Perhaps this is what Elijah thought. We can't. It needs the Lord to take that blessing. But what I wanted to say, brothers and sisters, is just this. And then I will draw to a close very quickly. Don't forget the Lord who is all about, will you? Don't forget that he's there. And more than he's there, if I could so put it, he's, as it were, tapping on the shoulder. Come on, Elijah. He knows you by name. Will Powell. Henry. Hubert. Martha. Mary. Whoever. Arise and eat and rest. And come and talk to me. Because I want you. As mine. I want to bless you. I want to encourage you. I want to lift you up. I want to reinstate you. Just as I see that you can be mine and in my service again. Just now. Peter denied the Lord. I bet he felt discouraged. And then the Lord came to him, resurrected. Peter had set his mind, it seems, on just going back to fishing. And the Lord said to him, Peter, do you love me? And Peter looked at him and said something like this, Lord, you know that I'm your friend. And the Lord said, Peter, do you love me? And the Lord, Peter said, you know that I'm your friend. And the Lord then said something like this, all right, Peter, are you my friend? Now come and follow me. See, the Lord comes to where we are. Your face might be half turned away from him. That's no barrier. He comes to you with your face half turned away from him and holds you till you are able to turn your face and look at him again and say, Lord, yes, just as you enable me, I will follow you again. Now take my life and strengthen me and give me those new prospects and that new work that you would have me to do, just the person that I am now today in your strength. I pray. I don't know. Are you resisting the Lord's call? If you are, you're like one of those that made Elijah downcast. Don't do that. Don't do that. Do you know somebody, people, who need encouragement, who are in need just practically of some expression of love? Are you somebody just now who feels like Elijah? Well, perhaps the Lord is a lot closer than you believe. They're tapping just now. Come to me. Come to me.